from KQED.
This is the California Report. Good morning to you. I'm John Sepulveda.
And I'm Lily Jamali. We begin today with politics. Even as a few ballots remain to be counted, the new state legislature was sworn in Monday. KQED's Scott Schaefer talked with Assembly Speaker Anthony Rendon about policy priorities for the coming year.
The Assembly chambers were packed Monday as newly elected legislators were sworn in, with plenty of family on hand to witness it. Democrats have historic majorities in both houses, especially in the Assembly, where they have at least 60 out of the 80 seats. But Assembly Speaker Anthony Rendon said while it's a new legislature, the issues are largely the same.
No matter what part of the state you're from, you've seen the impact of homelessness, and all of us pay far too much for housing, so housing will certainly be an issue that we focus on a lot too this year.
Other priorities, dealing with wildfire recovery and liability, child care, and, as always, health care. The legislature will be dealing with a new governor when Gavin Newsom takes over in January. Rendon says he and Newsom share a lot of the same priorities, including early childhood education. As to the question of whether Newsom and his family should move to Sacramento from their home in Marin County, Rendon took a hands-off approach.
I think it may have mattered in 1918. I'm not sure that it matters all that much in 2018. We can get from place to place pretty quickly, and our technology systems are such that I don't think it matters all that much.
Rendon said he expects lawmakers to take up bills that either didn't make it out of the legislature in the last session or were vetoed by Governor Brown, including ones dealing with sexual harassment and gun control. For the California Report, I'm Scott Schaefer in Sacramento.
State Senator Scott Wiener of San Francisco is again trying to push through a bill that could remake California cities by requiring high-density housing developments to be built near transit. Here's KQED's Dan Brecke.
Earlier this year, Scott Wiener's SB 827 would have required cities to allow dense housing within half a mile of commuter rail stations and a quarter mile of high-frequency bus lines. The legislation aimed to spur development as part of a solution to California's housing affordability crisis. But the bill was killed in its first committee vote. Now Wiener is back with a measure that takes a slightly different tack, but would still impose new requirements on traditionally local zoning decisions.
The way we've approached housing for many years, where we allow cities to do whatever they want with housing, and adopt whatever zoning they want, no matter how restrictive or exclusionary, that time period has come to an end.
The new bill still mandates dense housing near transit, but it would also require denser development in affluent communities that have lots of high-paying jobs but relatively little transit. The proposal has drawn support from several big city mayors, including Eric Garcetti of Los Angeles and San Francisco's London Breed. For the California Report, I'm Dan Brecke.
Let's go to Butte County now in the aftermath of the campfire. Last night, Sheriff Corey Honey announced that the list of missing, once as high as 1,300 people, has fallen to 11. After further DNA analysis, the number of those who died stands at 85. And now that the fire and smoke are gone, more than 30,000 students are returning to school. KQED's Michelle Wiley has more.
Good morning. Outside of the new Paradise Elementary School in nearby Oroville, kids bolt from their cars to greet the teachers and staff waiting for them. The school, which was given to them by the Oroville School District, is decorated with Birds of Paradise flowers and colorfully painted rocks that read, Paradise Strong. Students from Butte County have been out of school for almost a month, ever since the deadly campfire started at the beginning of November and left many of their school buildings seriously damaged or completely destroyed. So students are being relocated to Paradise Elementary and other schools across Butte County. Like 10-year-old Charlotte Mers. She attended a new charter school today and is the only student from Paradise in her class.
Honestly, I think it went really well. Everybody was really accepting.
Before the campfire started, she attended Ponderosa Elementary School. And on the morning of the blaze, Mers and her classmates were loaded onto a school bus that drove through flames to get them out. The trip took a total of 6 hours.
So I just tried to go into my happy place and take my mind off everything. And I was texting my parents with my phone, which I'm so glad that I brought.
Mers and her family are staying with friends in the short term. Now that she's back in school, they hope to get into a house of their own as soon as possible. For the California Report, I'm Michelle Wiley in Chico.
Well, 1 year ago today, an electrical transformer blew up and it sparked a massive brush fire in Ventura County. That, of course, was the cause of the Thomas Fire, then the largest wildfire in recent history, until the Mendocino Complex and campfires this year eclipsed it. KCBX's Greta Mart reports.
Between December 4th, 2017, and when it was finally put out in mid-January this year, the Thomas Fire burned nearly 450 square miles, killed two people, and destroyed over 1,000 homes. But then on January 9th, an intense rainstorm fell on Santa Barbara hillsides scorched by the fire, causing a 15-foot wave of mud and boulders to crash down on the town of Montecito. The debris flow killed at least 22 people and destroyed around 100 homes, damaging many more. Thomas Tighe runs Direct Relief, a Santa Barbara-based nonprofit that provides medical supplies for people evacuating disasters around the world.
It was by far the worst disaster in the history of Santa Barbara with the loss of life.
A year ago, Tighe found himself responding to the Thomas Fire. Then he lost his own home in the debris flow. While the recovery is ongoing, he says it's
kind of a sharp reminder that we're all vulnerable to some degree and sometimes much more so than you care to think about.
Kevin Taylor is a division chief with the Montecito Fire Department. He's aware people still live on edge here.
We're still at risk for catastrophic debris flow if we receive high-intensity, short-duration rain.
Taylor says the Thomas Fire burn scar is only about 20% repaired. Because of this, local emergency officials have issued 3 evacuation orders due to storms in the past year. They constantly update risk maps and have a new one for this week's expected rain. For the California Report, I'm Greta Mart in San Luis Obispo.
Arrest rates have reached a historic low across California, according to a new report. As KQED's Ryan Levy explains, they've fallen by 58% since their peak in the late 80s.
The decline was driven primarily by a major drop in the arrest rate of people 24 or younger, according to the analysis by the Public Policy Institute of California, which looked at arrest data from 1980 through 2016. Magnus Lofstrom, who co-authored the report, said one of the most surprising findings had to do with gender.
The fact that women now are making up an increasing share of arrests, and now almost one quarter of all arrests being of women, that was a surprise.
Smaller, more rural counties like Lake, Siskiyou, and Shasta had the highest arrest rates, while more urban counties like Riverside, Santa Clara, and San Francisco had the lowest. However, counties both large and small still have huge racial disparities, with arrest rates as high as 9 times greater for African Americans than white Californians in some counties. Overall, rates for African Americans are 3 times higher than for white people, even though African Americans saw the biggest drop of any racial group. Lofstrom says he hopes the data can be used as a starting point for finding solutions to inequalities in the criminal justice system. For the California Report, I'm Ryan Levy.
Conservative groups in UC Berkeley have reached a settlement agreement in a 2017 free speech case. The lawsuit stems from allegations by students that the school selectively discriminated against conservatives invited to speak on campus. In exchange for the plaintiffs dropping their lawsuit, the school agreed to make changes to its event policy and cover the costs of extra security for most student events. Here's plaintiff's attorney, Harmeet Dhillon.
Since the costs are not being shoved off on some unpopular group but being borne by the campus, I think the campus is going to be a lot less tolerant of fatuous, disruptive attempts to try to silence speech on campus based on its viewpoint.
A UC Berkeley spokesman says the agreement simply clarifies policies that were already in place.
We're going to turn now to a story we've been following in Southern California, this one about a needle exchange program in Orange County. This program is quite contentious, as we've reported here on the California Report before. A judge in San Diego County has granted an injunction against that needle exchange, halting it for the time being. Here's KQED's Michelle Wiley.
At the beginning of this year, the Orange County Needle Exchange lost its ability to operate in the Santa Ana Civic Center. So they applied to the California Department of Public Health for a permit for a mobile needle exchange. And they got approved. Bought a van, supplies.
Sadly, it never was able to operate since our approval back in August.
That's Dallas Augustine. She's on the board of the Orange County Needle Exchange Program. The main issue has been needle litter. Orange County officials say the exchange's policy of giving out clean needles will contribute to that litter and creates a public nuisance. But Augustine says that without the exchange operating, the litter is only going to get worse.
We've been hearing more and more reports lately of people finding needles, but we've been shut down for a year now, and those are needles that would have a place to be properly disposed if we were operating.
At a recent meeting, board members in the exchange program discussed next steps, including filing an appeal. For the California Report, I'm Michelle Wiley.
Of course, President Donald Trump says he has secured a deal with China that will ban the making of fentanyl. That is one of the big opioids that is flooding the U.S. market. Of course, we should know that the U.S. has heard this from China before. Meanwhile, there's been a question among researchers about whether drug users are actually demanding fentanyl or if that's just what they're getting. A UCSF study published today looks at that problem exactly. Here's KQED's Raquel Maria Dillon.
Fentanyl is often sold deceptively as heroin, but it's dozens of times stronger. UCSF researchers analyzed historical heroin prices and the presence of fentanyl in the market. They found when heroin prices spiked during a shortage in 2013, fentanyl overdoses increased. Lead author Sarah Marr says knowing that connection should inform public policy.
If we know that fentanyl is being introduced at the wholesale level into bulk supplies, and we introduce strict laws that penalize users and low-level dealers, we'll be holding out false hope that we're doing something constructive when it won't make any difference.
Marr says drug wholesalers are selling fentanyl because it's cheaper to produce and ship than heroin, and drug users often don't even know which one they're taking. For the California Report, I'm Raquel Maria Dillon.
Support for the California Report comes from Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose Fund for Strategic Innovation supports transformative ideas that benefit humanity while protecting the natural world, recognizing through science the interdependence of all living systems. The James Irvine Foundation, committed to a California where all low-income workers have the power to advance economically. Learn more at irvine.org. And Collective Health. American employers are in the healthcare business. It's time they had the technology to drive it. CollectiveHealth.com.
Well, as people in Butte County grapple with the aftermath of the deadliest wildfire in California history, there are new questions about the long-term impact of smoke from the campfire. It not only affected locals, as you remember, it also traveled for miles in all directions. Aaron Glantz is a reporter with Reveal News and the Center for Investigative Reporting. He spoke with KQED's Penny Nelson about what we know and don't know about how wildfire smoke affects our health.
Can you tell us what kinds of things are people taking in when they breathe in wildfire smoke?
Well, we're breathing trees and leaves that go up in smoke, 150,000 acres of wildland in this most recent campfire. But then we're also smoking 19,000 buildings, everything in those buildings. We're breathing Drano, we're breathing asbestos. And what we don't know is what is the health impact of breathing all of these things together.
Who's behind data collection on the long-term health effects of this kind of smoke inhalation?
We looked at the hospital records. So every hospital in California is reporting to the state. We found that 3 months after the Tubbs fire ripped through Napa and Sonoma counties, emergency room admissions for heart problems and breathing problems were up 20%. That's bad. And it's so recent that even though there are all these scientists who are looking into this, when we called them for comment on our findings were still new to them. The questions that we're asking now, after 19,000 buildings burned in the campfire, are different than the questions we would have been asking just a few years ago with the Rim Fire in Yosemite, when it's just trees and shrubs that are burning.
Well, Aaron Glantz, reporting on this matter for Reveal News and the Center for Investigative Reporting, thanks so much for sharing your information with us.
Thank you.
You can read more about Aaron's investigation into wildfire smoke and our health at revealnews.org. And that's the California Report for this Tuesday, December 4th, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm Lily Jamali.
And I'm John Sepulvedo. Have a great day.